from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you walk through the French Quarter, New Orleans, Louisiana, whence this program originates again today, boy, you must like it there. You saw this week the unmistakable signs of the seriousness with which people all over this town, New Orleans, were taking the job of preparing for the ceremony of and the period of time in which all seriousness is abandoned. It's a lovely little prelude to the festivities to see the absolute avidity with which people are assembling their costumes or decorating their houses, and then it's just for the sake of going, hey, who cares? But this broadcast, as you know, is not about benign craziness. It's about the other kind. And so, almost a buried lead. By the way, congratulations to all the Iraqis. As this program is being broadcast, it looks like the election went off. The numbers for turnout are being adduced as better than America. That's a very high bar we've set, isn't it? And congratulations to the Iraqi women, because by statute, by fiat, by Renault, by whatever, one-third of the candidates in this election had to be female. Now, A, it sounds like just an invitation to interesting forms of cheating, which we'll discover in the days and weeks ahead, because, you know, the burqa can hide. But it also sounds like a quota. What the hell is that? Is that the kind of democracy we're spreading? Quotas? Hello? Also, congratulations to all the Shiites who voted because they were told it was their religious duty to do so. Nice to see somebody fulfills their religious duty. And this from a story in the New York Times earlier in the week, in the run-up, as they say, to the Iraqi election, when the administration was trying desperately, well, frantically, well, enthusiastically, to reduce expectations. Would not, you know, for weeks we've been joking about that comment that it's not a numbers game in election. You know, you don't want to look at turnout numbers as a judgment. Well, it turns out they turned out, or at least in some areas they did. So now the numbers game will be back. But the goal, this is from a few days ago, the goal, a Bush advisor said, this, of course, under the cloak of anonymity because no retaliation would be taken. The goal was not only to lower expectations, but to avoid any definition of success. Now that's a bar I can surmount with ease, ladies and gentlemen. I want the Peabody Award for just showing up to do a radio show. It's, you know, there's why is there a definition of success beyond it? The administration's position was just having the election is the success. To dispense with the cliche analogy right away, they had elections in South Vietnam. Very successful. But to avoid any definition of success, to me, that's pointing the way forward for a very hopeful future. Sit down, relax. You've already done it. Hello, welcome to the show.
To do.
from the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, from just off the Gulf of Mexico. Getting closer all the time if that coastal erosion is doing its magic. This is another edition of the show. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you there, too. And amidst all the early celebrating by members of the administration, Condi Rice, newly sworn in Secretary of State, and I hope my flowers arrived. Condi Rice went on the Sunday morning yak shows to try to define success again. Now that we know it's not a failure. And she did take time out to remind us of one very interesting fact.
And we have to remember, we went to Iraq not just for the Iraqi people. We went to Iraq because American security interests were involved.
Isn't that wild? I know it was only one channel, but we went to Iraq because Americans. Interesting to remember that. Interesting to point that out at this point in time. Dr. Rice. Dr. Rice. Dateline Oslo, Norway. An Iraqi scientist has written a book in which he describes being taken to see Saddam Hussein in 1981 after 18 months in jail. I presume the scientist spent 18 months in jail. I don't believe Saddam did. And being instructed by him, Saddam, to build an atomic bomb. By the end of 1990, about 4,000 people were involved directly or indirectly in the nuclear program, said the scientist, Jafar al-Jafar. Yes, they are running out of names over there. At a news conference in Oslo, Norway, announcing the publication of his book in Norway, entitled The Assignment. He repeated assertions that the program would have succeeded in developing atomic weapons in the early 1990s had Iraq not invaded Kuwait. So Saddam screwed himself. But here's an interesting fact at the bottom of the story. We were 3 years away, give or take a year, said Mr. Jafar, who fled Iraq during the American-led invasion in 2003. In his book, Jafar said Iraq did not have an atomic weapons program after 1991. Why didn't you write the book back then? Could have helped. No, come on. We're happy to be helping. But we did go there out of an issue of security to protect us from that nuclear weapon, that mushroom cloud that Jafar al-Jafar said was not happening. In the run-up to the war, General Amer al-Sadi, here's some news from beyond the bubble, outside the bubble. General Amer al-Sadi, top scientific advisor to Saddam Hussein. God, he had a lot of scientific advisors. He must have really liked science. General Amer al-Sa'adi never wavered in his assertion that Iraq's weapons of mass destruction would not be found. They had been destroyed after the 1991 Gulf War, he insisted. And of course, we now know he wasn't lying. Yet, nearly 2 years after the war, Sa'adi, who acted as the main liaison with United Nations inspectors in Iraq, languishes in jail in Iraq without charge. His German wife, Helma, that's not the way the Germans or the Iraqis pronounce it, for your listening pleasure, who is in Baghdad, says the chances of his release may have improved, but her hopes have been dashed before. The search for weapons has ended, and that should be followed by positive action, she says, but this has been a roller coaster ride. The family keeps approaching people, and they receive vague promises, but nothing happens. Sa'adi was one of 55 in the deck of cards. He gave himself up to the occupying authorities soon after the list was published. When the U.S. transferred sovereignty to the Iraqis last June, legal authority over the detainees was handed over to the interim Iraqi government. The U.S.-based Human Rights Watch says the continued detention without charge of Mr. Sa'adi and others is a violation of get this, international human rights law. That is so rich. If the Iraqi government has legal authority over Sa'adi, says the organization, it must charge him or release him. Ms. Sa'adi says her husband is a victim of the Hussein regime rather than an accomplice and wants to know on what grounds he's being held. Throughout the year, she says, Amer served his country. He succeeded in staying independent of the Ba'ath party. This was not easy and was very dangerous, she says, in an appeal for his release. The price of being right, ladies and gentlemen. And the United Nations top elections official, Karina Parelli, in the run-up to the Iraqi election, sharply criticized U.S. military forces for distributing material urging Iraqis to vote. I guess it worked. What the hell? Take that, UN. Take that, Ms. Pirelli. Take your tires and go home. This, ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show. And we continue now with a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. It's not that one. Take it from me. It's this one. Yes, our first technical error of the day. Keep those scoreboards ready. These are tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. You'll hear that sound again, though. Dear Harry from Chuck, last Thursday I agreed to drop off a colleague at the John Wayne Airport in Orange County. The two terminals are side by side, making it very easy to drive in and pick up or drop off passengers. As you drive towards the departure drop-off area, there are three lanes for drop-off and two for driving through the airport. The terminal is on your right-hand side, while a rooftop parking lot connected to the terminal by a covered overhead walkway is on the left. Emblazoned on the walkway in large, permanent, menacing letters is "No unattended vehicles allowed." Since my last visit to the airport, I noticed a new service was being offered. Valet parking. No more than 50 feet from the ticket counters and with a clear view of the overhead warning, were three lanes, each 8 cars deep, of unattended vehicles that had been dropped off. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. An oh-so-copyrighted feature of this broadcast. What do they know and when do they know it, department? Dayline Houston, the chief executive of Halliburton, said this week that the company would withdraw all employees from Iran and end its business activities there after its Iranian energy exploration contracts came under criticism this month. Criticism of Halliburton. Imagine that, ladies and gentlemen. Halliburton in Iran, aren't American companies? Halliburton and a handful of other American companies have been able to circumvent sanctions against doing business in Iran. But now, no more. And industry lobbyists worked with key Republican lawmakers to sabotage new security regulations for chemical plants after 9/11. According to Christy Todd Whitman, former Environmental Protection Agency head under the Bush administration. That's from her new book. Heard about that? I bet not. Many chemical plants, including dozens in New Jersey, could release toxic clouds that could kill tens or even hundreds of thousands of people. In her new book, Whitman placed the blame squarely at the feet of chemical industry lobbyists and congressional Republicans for safety regulations of chemical plants that failed to pass Congress. So, yet another angry ex-cabinet member hits the book promotion trail, ladies and gentlemen. Watch for her when she comes to your town.
Trouble when you call on the phone. Strangers tell you that you'll be home.
Ladies and gentlemen, the week began with news of the death of Johnny Carson, the quantum king of late night. Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. And was followed immediately by what can only be called a barrage of revisionist show business. At least what can only be called by me a barrage of revisionist show business. Now, I'm going to save my own personal Johnny Carson stories for my memoirs, not yet written. But my memory of the show is most accurately reflected in this piece of work by Richard Beebe, Michael McKeon, David L. Lander, and myself as The Credibility Gap.
From Hollywood, The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson. This is Ed McMahon on with Doc Severin and the NBC Orchestra, inviting you to join Johnny and his guests, Don Rickles, gay liberation activist Frazier Timmons, author Dr. William Gielgud, and a funny animal psychic. And now, here's Johnny!
Thank you. That's the biggest hand I've got since I was goosed by Mighty Joe Young. No, you know, out here, we're in Hollywood now, and out here, of course, you meet all the stars. Just the other day, I was in the Hollywood Ranch Market, and all the stars shop there. I don't know what it is. It's a kind of a freaky market.
Yes.
I was in the vegetable section, propositioning a prune. No, this is serious now. This is serious. And I saw Rosemary Clooney, Mickey Rooney, Billy Moomy reaches to me and dump the Wonder Panda and Rin Tin Tin gets fitted for a truss.
This was a market, sir.
No, I thought I'd go right to the biggie, Ed. Whoa. Hey, look at those clothes the doctor is wearing tonight. Doc, what do you call that outfit, huh?
It's a perky chiffon top with puffy sleeves, a ribbed knit dirndl, and a matching poochie scarf.
Poochie, huh? Yeah, I hope it's housebroken. Whoa! Woo! Whoa, who needs writers, huh? What else is in the news today? Oh, yeah. They got this strange newspaper out here. You seen it? It's called a free press.
Yes.
And it's just weird, weird paper. Yes. They sell it on the street. I don't know how they get away with it.
No.
And it is pretty gamey stuff. But I got a copy of it, opened it up in the NBC green room, and this rubber thing fell out. This is true. It was Ed's enema kit.
This is true.
Yeah. You got to stop eating with those Clydesdales, Ed. Too much roughage in your kibble. We got a great show tonight, don't we? Do we have a great show tonight?
Yes.
We always do. All right, did I miss anything? Stay tuned, won't you? Did you come for the tour?
No.
Hi, you're new around the pool hall, aren't you? What's your name, sweetheart?
Una von Una.
Una von Una. That's a beautiful name.
No, Johnny, it is a dumb name. But thank you anyway.
What do you do out here, honey? You in pictures or what?
No, I'm a prostitute.
Oh. Well, God bless you for the wonderful work you're doing, Una.
Thank you.
I meant it. Everybody's got a... Now, I don't know whether I should ask you this, Una, but you got something for me?
Oh, yes. Johnny, in honor of all the publicity you've given the massage business, the Southern California Manual Catharsis Institute have awarded you, Johnny Carson, this huge bronze replica.
Oh, look at this. Oh. Isn't that beautiful? Did you know this was going to happen? Wow. Thank you, darling. Isn't this nice? Wow. You know, it's funny. I never know what to say to a prostitute except thank you and good night.
Good night, Jenny.
Una von una.
Thank you so much.
Boy, she's got a pair of poochies on her, huh? Isn't that great? Wow. I hate these damn moments. They're so stupid, you know? Okay, what do we got?
Gay activists.
Oh, the fag thing, that's right. I should explain this. We've gotten some mail from the gay liberation people who apparently feel that they haven't been treated fairly on the show. I said fairly. Now, we don't necessarily feel that we've done anything wrong, but just to make sure that there aren't any hard feelings... No. Come on now, this is serious. This is serious. We can get sued. We've offered two gentlemen time on the show to come out and explain why they came out. So would you welcome first the chairman of the Southern California Gay Activists Liberation Alliance, or GALA. And this is interesting. He's also a lieutenant in the United States Air Force Reserve. Would you please welcome Lieutenant Frazier Timmons. Evening, sir. Glad to meet you.
Evening.
Mr. Timmons, I'm glad you could be with us tonight, sir. Do I call you, sir?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Johnny. I'm glad we're finally getting a chance to express our point of view.
Well, I am too, sir. You know, I was reading the Reader's Digest condensation of the article that you wrote for the New York Times Magazine.
Uh-huh.
And one thing you said struck me as interesting. You said, as I recall, you thought homosexuals should stop pretending and should openly declare themselves to be what they are. Now, this wasn't a put-on, was it?
No, Johnny, this was a press release, but it expressed my feelings and the feelings of millions of my fellow homo Americans. You see, based on the nature of American society, Johnny, when a homosexual pretends to be what he's not, he only hurts himself.
Mm. Well, now, I think I read this somewhere, but aren't most homosexuals masochists anyway?
Not at all, Johnny, and this is what we're really angry about. You see, the distorted image of the homosexual that comes through the media equating us with effeminacy and perversion.
Whoa.
And well, now you know what I'm talking about. Mm. The stereotype interior decorator.
Yeah, that's a funny bit.
The effeminate barber. Mm. I mean, this has nothing to do with the reality of homosexual life. We're people. And like people, you can find homosexuals in all sorts of jobs.
What? Now, for example, what kinds of positions?
Well...
Seriously, what kinds of occupations, let's say?
Well, there are lawyers, accountants. I mean, I'm in the Air Force, right? Now, on TV, you never see a homosexual portrayed as a soldier. And yet there are millions of us leading a normal life in the military.
Mm, that's interesting.
And prisons. Where in the prison movies do you ever see a homosexual? And yet homosexuals virtually run our prisons.
Now, that's a really thankless job, too, isn't it?
And these aren't the sissies... These aren't the sissies and the pansies like the TV image would have you believe. I mean, these are people who committed perfectly normal crimes. Burglary, a bank robbery, a forgery, crimes of wit and deception.
Well, then, Lieutenant, I guess this whole question doesn't fall under the Peter principle. Come on. What'd I say? Come on, golly. This audience is hotter than Toady Field's sauna pants. Hey-o! Lieutenant Simmons, I want to get back to you on this because I'm interested in this. We have another guest who I should bring out now because he's written a book that's a study on homosexual behavior. And the book is called Island of Fire. Would you please welcome Dr. William Gielgud? Doctor, good evening.
Thank you.
Have you met Mr. Timmons?
Yes, backstage.
Doctor, I assume that you heard what Mr. Timmons had to say.
Yes, I did, John, and while I respect his stature in the homophile community, I hope he doesn't pretend to speak for all homosexuals. things just aren't that simple. Many of the homosexuals I've interviewed prefer to keep their air of mystery. They're, for the most part, perhaps more flamboyant and colorful But despite the fact that they have a far more intense sense of humor than the rest of us, I don't think they want their private lives flaunted like so much white whale corduroy.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that. They do seem to get more jokes.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Well, that...
Now, Doctor, based on your research,
yeah.
Would you say that homosexuals are being treated unfairly by television?
By television repairmen, yes. But that's a local matter. Now, the reason that I call my book Island of Fire mm-hmm. is because the homosexual, driven by his disease, finds himself like an island apart from the rest of us, and yet on fire, literally, with a passion that he cannot conventionally suppress. Hence, Island of Fire. Also, of course, they all live on Fire Island.
But, Doctor, by insisting on calling it a disease, you're contributing to the stereotype. Just because two men get together in the evening, put on bathrobes, and fry up a couple of steaks is no reason to call them sick.
Well,
they're frying steaks, you can call them rich.
Johnny.
Come on.
Johnny, you see, the trouble with militant homosexuals is that they just don't know their place.
Well, it's a lucky thing they don't know Doc's place. He'd have to go to Capizio's in a mess.
He probably would.
I shouldn't joke about this. I want to ask a couple more questions because I've got some things to learn about this, too. But I should bring out our next guest now because, the health department's about to tear down his mouth. Would you please welcome Mr. Warmth, Don Rickles.
It's a really funny show, John. I've been watching backstage. Two faggots and a drunk. You got a lot of taste, John. No kidding.
No, it's a little steamy around the edges, Don, but this is an important show.
No, it's you I'm talking about, John. You're sick. You got crap in your head, John. Here I am sitting next to the forbidden fruits.
No,
it's good to see you fellas. I like the lieutenant, John.
Oh, you do?
He's got your eyes. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Are you a career man, sir?
No, I'm in the reserve.
What are you waiting for? No kidding, this guy's great, John.
Don.
Having a wonderful time.
Don, can I interrupt
for a second? Yeah, go ahead, I'll read your lips.
I know that all this is done in pretty good fun, but I'd still like to point out and have people know that although publicly Don Rickles puts on the air of a person who doesn't like homosexuals, he's actually done more for them than any other straight person in America today, myself included.
Oh.
No, it's true.
I didn't know this.
No, you deserve it.
Maybe I should give you the replica.
That's really funny, John. I might be serious for a moment. Thank you very much, Doctor. I've done the only thing a performer can do, the good Lord and my mother willing, lend my services as an entertainer to their various functions.
To their functions, huh?
Yeah, that's right, John. I'm the guy with the rubber hose who yells, "Bend over, I'm a gypsy." Ed, good to see you. What are you doing here with these bimbos? I thought you were Irish. I mean, somebody help me. I'm sitting between two Nelly Bells and a stewed blimp. I joke. How's your son, Ed? Huh? How's little Kippy or whatever his name is? Still blame the accident on you, does he? Now, seriously, Ed, how are you?
Fine, thank you, sir.
Good, you fat turd.
Don, you're a cuckoo bird.
Just, God bless you, John.
Just crazy, crazy. Lieutenant Timmons, you're going to be speaking at the gay liberation rally at the Anaheim Convention Center next week, aren't you?
Yes, that's right, Johnny. We'll be talking
Anaheim,
about...
huh? You got a cop a feel off of Goofy while you're there?
Doctor, can we look for you somewhere?
I'll tell you where you can look for him, John. Try the Times Square subway at midnight. He's the one yelling, "Where's the tunnel? Where's the tunnel?"
Yeah, the one with the velveteen jockey shorts and the NBC peacock in his pants.
That's a good one, John. I admit. That's great. One for the Cornhusker. Oh, by the way, I got a message for you. Your ex-wife wants a vibrator back.
Yeah. Probably wants to use it on her poochie.
That's cute. What the hell is it? Someone ding-dong school.
Tomorrow night, something a little bit... Something a little bit special tomorrow night. We've been telling you about it for a couple of days, and I know you won't want to miss it. We'll have J.P. Morgan, Buddy Rich, either Fernando Lamas or Ricardo Montalban, and of course at midnight, something the staff has been working on all week over at the Sheraton Universal, Miss Miller's funeral. I don't think you want to miss it. And if we have time, of course, that funny animal segment that we promised you.
Sounds like a good show, John.
Oh, yeah. A biggie. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Don. Thank you, girls. And good night, everybody.
Stephanie Powers and Doodles Weaver co-star in The Wonderful World of Rub.
This is Le Show. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Yes. Denver financier Philip Anschutz's Clarity Media Group has yanked an ad promoting its Washington, D.C. and San Francisco newspapers amid criticism the advertisement demonized Palestinian children. The ad in the January 24th edition of the media trade publication Media Week showed a girl playing a violin on one side and a Palestinian girl carrying an assault rifle on the other. Superimposed over the two pictures were the words, PTA to PLO. The ad, which was meant to attract advertisers, went on to say, "No local newspaper has ever delivered news of this scope." "It has been brought to our attention that a recent advertisement promoting the Examiners caused concern and offense to readers," said Clarity Media Group. "We sincerely apologize." There's your clarity right there. A radio station in New York apologized for repeatedly airing a joke saying that airing a joke song that ridiculed victims of the recent tsunami in South Asia and used racial slurs. Hot 97 ran the segment on its Miss Jones in the Morning show. The piece used racial slurs to describe people swept away in the disaster and made jokes about child slavery and people watching their mothers die. That's what makes radio great, ladies and gentlemen. Comedy like that. The entire staff of the show was taken off the air on Wednesday. And the radio station, however, ran the segment repeatedly last week on the show. Not just once, you see what I'm saying. And they blamed the staff, you see what I'm saying. "What happened is morally and socially indefensible," said the president of MS Radio, which owns the station. You see what I'm saying. Ran it repeatedly. You see what I'm saying. Dateline Sugarland, Texas. The city has apologized to the widow of a former Enron executive after being found in contempt of court for losing photo negatives from the investigation of his suicide. These things happen. A Travis County judge imposed a $500 fine and ordered the apology letter sent to Carol Whalen as part of a settlement approved by the city council last week. Her husband, the former Enron vice chairman, killed himself 3 years ago. The Bible of Rock and Roll, Rolling Stone magazine, will run an ad for the Holy Bible next month, the same ad it rejected 2 weeks ago for its, quote, spiritual message. "We have addressed the internal miscommunication that led to the previous misstatement of company policy and apologize for any confusion it may have caused," said Lisa Dallas, spokeswoman for Rolling Stone's parent company. She declined to elaborate, lest she use any more words with "miss" as the prefix. Dateline Washington, Maggie Gallagher, a writer, is the newest person, not the newest, but the second person, acknowledged to have taken money from the federal government for writing columns and op-ed pieces favorable to government programs. "Did I violate journalistic ethics by not disclosing it? I don't know. You tell me," she said to the Washington Post. "I would have been happy to tell anyone who called me, but frankly, it never occurred to me to disclose it." Later in the day, she filed a column in which she said, "I should have disclosed a government contract when I wrote about the Bush marriage initiative. I would have if I had remembered it. My apologies to my readers." Those government contracts are so hard to remember. They're so bereft in needed paperwork. But wait, there's more. Dateline Rochester, Minnesota. An editor in a Minnesota college newspaper has apologized for a recent editorial in which he referred to killing the president of the United States. Shane Solomon wrote the editorial. He wrote, "He took go so far as killing the president of the United States if that's what it took to protect the rights of Americans." A Secret Service agent showed up at the newspaper after the editorial appeared. The newspaper's advisor had the miscreant student apologize in another editorial, saying he never meant it as a threat against the president. Speaking of presidents, how are we doing on time, Bob? Okay, we're fine. The president of Ireland has apologized for controversially comparing Nazi hatred of Jews with Protestant attitude towards Catholics in Northern Ireland. Mary McAleese said she was deeply sorry for the remark she made on the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Nazi death camp Auschwitz. The words I used were clumsy. She said, "The last thing I would want to do is create the impression that sectarianism came from only one side of the community." Folks, one thing we've learned from these apologies over the years now, well, two things, actually. Humor belongs in the hands of professionals, and I don't mean radio shock jocks. And two, comparisons to the Nazis really, really don't wash. Dateline London, soccer star David Beckham received an apology from the Phillips Encyclopedia. Yes, they not only make shavers, they make which wrongly informed readers that he plays for the Italian team Inter Milan. Beckham actually plays for Spain's Real Madrid. He received an apology from the book's editor, Bill Hemsley. But the mistake cannot be corrected until the 2006 edition of the Encyclopedia comes out. Serves you right for reading encyclopedias in the first place. Bernie Ebbers, one of WorldCom's top financial officers, told a federal court, one of WorldCom's top financial officers told a federal court yesterday that Bernie Ebbers, the former chief executive, personally apologized after staff were pressured to doctor the company's accounting books by more than $700 million in order to satisfy Wall Street expectations. "I'm sorry you were asked to do what you were asked to do. It's something you should not have been put in that position to do," says David Myers, formerly WorldCom's controller, recalling Ebbers' remarks. "He gave me his word that we would never have to do it again." Washington State coach Dick Bennett publicly apologized for making an obscene gesture toward the Washington students section during Sunday's men's basketball game at Edmondson Pavilion. Bennett briefly gave the middle finger to the student section, which was raucous throughout the game, with coordinated chants directed at the Cougars. "I mistakenly made a gesture," he said, to the Washington student section. "I apologize to the students going to and coming from the locker room at halftime. I wish I hadn't done it, and I am sorry for it." He's an educator, ladies and gentlemen. Basketball coach. The British Medical Journal has apologized for reporting that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration was reviewing confidential Eli Lilly documents that had been sent to the British Medical Journal by an anonymous source, that the documents had gone missing during a lawsuit filed against Eli Lilly. All the documents, in turn, had been preserved by the court. The British Medical Journal apologized. And finally, Jonathan Baker, the contestant, apparently everyone love to hate on The Amazing Race 6, took pains to apologize. "What you see on the show is not a true reflection of me, and I'm disappointed that it turned out this way," he said. "If my behavior on the show offended anyone, I apologize." The Amazing Race, ladies and gentlemen, seen in Singapore. "Our biggest downfall was our bickering," but he said that his wife and he didn't really bicker as much as they were portrayed on the television reality show. Reality, ladies and gentlemen. A fungible concept when I read the apologies of the week for you. It is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And you are so welcome. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of bad apples. Dateline Baghdad. Iraqi authorities routinely torture prisoners, a leading human rights group said this week, citing examples of abuse, which will sound familiar to those who suffered under Saddam Hussein. Yes, we've come a long way to go nowhere. Prisoners have been beaten with cables and hose pipes, suffered electric shocks to their earlobes and genitals, according to Human Rights Watch. Some have been starved of food and water and crammed into standing room-only cells. The people of Iraq were promised something better than this after the government of Saddam Hussein fell, said Sarah Whitson of Human Rights Watch. The Iraqi interim government is not keeping its promises to honor and respect basic human rights. Detainees report kicking, slapping, punching, prolonged suspension from the wrists with the hands tied behind the back, electric shocks to sensitive parts of the body, and being kept blindfolded and or handcuffed continuously for several days. In several cases, the detainees suffered what may be permanent physical disability. They're just a few Iraqi bad apples, aren't they? Army personnel, U.S. Army personnel, have admitted to or beating or threatening to kill Iraqi detainees or stealing money from Iraqi civilians, but have not been charged with criminal conduct, according to newly released U.S. Army documents. Only a handful of the 54 investigations of alleged detainee abuse and other illicit activities detailed in the documents led to recommended penalties as severe as a court-martial or discharge from military service. Most led to administrative fines or simply withered because investigators could not find victims or evidence. Due to inadequate record-keeping, this office could only... inadequate record-keeping in the cases of few bad apples, ladies and gentlemen, in the United States Army. You know that the British Army has its own share of bad apples. They're on court-martial right now. They're being allowed to present the defense that they were only following orders. One of four Britons freed from Guantanamo Bay last week is alleged being tortured, nearly suffocated, and repeatedly assaulted while in American detention, according to the British liberal newspaper The Independent. In the first detailed account to emerge, Mozam Beg from Birmingham, we call it Birmingham, has accused his U.S. captors of threatening his family, killing fellow detainees, and interrogating him more than 250 times. His testimony was written while he was in solitary confinement at Gitmo, as we like to call it. It details why he visited Islamist training camps in Afghanistan and describes when he was being captured by U.S. agents. While he was being held in Afghanistan, he was, quote, dragged into an isolation room, my hand shackled from behind to my ankles and a suffocating hood placed over my head. I was struck about the head several times, then left in that manner on the floor for several hours, only to be interrogated again. He says he was coerced into signing a false confession at Guantanamo Bay by the same U.S. interrogators who had allegedly tortured him back at Afghanistan. He signed the confession, which claimed he was a member of al-Qaeda, quote, with memories fresh with the threats of summary trials, life imprisonment, and execution. They reiterated the previous threats. Interrogators, he said, used sleep deprivation, racial and religious taunts, being chained to a door for hours with a suffocating plastic handbag as a hood, arm twisting, forced bowing, and several beatings. Let's throw in the beatings as a nice bonus. Just some bad apples, ladies and gentlemen. Just a few bad apples in Afghanistan and Guantanamo Bay. Oh, and apropos of which, this quotation, this so-called ill-treatment and torture in detention centers, story of which were spread everywhere among the people and later by the prisoners who were freed, were not, as some assumed, inflicted methodically, but were excesses committed by individual prison guards, their deputies, and men who laid violent hands on the detainees. Unquote. Rudolf Hess, SS Commandant at Auschwitz, on how Nazi excesses were caused by a few bad apples.
They always say a fish stinks from its head, but what if it started at the tail instead? It's just a few bad apples messing up the bunch. A few bad apples bringing up your lunch. Just a few germs can start a common cold. Just a few cells dying off make you so very old. It's just a few bad apples. They're so rotten to the core. A few bad apples, maybe several more. Don't be angry, save the outrage, don't get mad. It's just those few bad apples, not spending time in chapels. Just those few apples going bad. No, it's just a waste of time looking round the top of that tree, 'cause the rotten fruit is hanging so close to you and me. Just a few drums can start up a parade. Just a few defective oranges can spoil the Minute Maid. It's just those few bad apples, and it happens every time. a few bad apples, and those suspects are so prime. You might as well change the uniform to plaid. They'll always be those apples, drinking more than Snapples. It's those few apples going bad, so bad, so bad.
This is Le Show. Ladies and gentlemen, we haven't done Hot Property on this show in a long time, but this one I couldn't resist. News Corporation mogul Rupert Murdoch is looking for another real estate record. Late last year, he set a Manhattan record with his $44 million all-cash purchase of the late Lawrence Rockefeller's penthouse on Fifth Avenue. Now, all cash, $44 million. Rupert, don't say thank you. You're entitled. Now, according to several downtown brokers specializing in the luxury market, Murdoch is quietly shopping his penthouse, 141 Prince Street, at prices that would beat anything ever paid for an apartment below 14th Street. He's asking for, quote, north of $30 million for a New York apartment. He doesn't want to list the penthouse actively, but if you have a buyer willing to pay multiple millions, I have been told to call the Murdoch, said one agent. Murdoch declined to comment about his plans. He paid $6.5 million in 1999 for the 12-room apartment, but now wants 34. Hey, he's renovated. And some other news from outside the bubble. To collect badly needed intelligence on the ground about Iran's alleged nuclear program. You following me now? Iran? Same Iran that Halliburton is pulling out of? The United States is depending heavily on Israeli-trained teams of Kurds in northern Iraq and on U.S. teams of former Iranian exiles in the south to gather the intelligence. Both groups are doing cross-border incursions into Iran. The group working from the south is the Mujahideen-e-Khalq. Listed by the State Department as a terrorist group. But you see, now we're fighting tyranny, not terrorism, so it's okay to use them? Is that right? I'm trying to keep up. The use of the MEC for U.S. intelligence gathering mission strikes some former U.S. intelligence officials as bizarre. The State Department's annual publication, Patterns of Global Terrorism, lists them as a terrorist organization. MEC were allies with Saddam Hussein in fighting against Iran, and in addition, assisted Saddam in suppressing opposition within Iraq, according to our State Department. They also performed internal security for the Iraqi regime, according to the U.S. The MEK are launching raids against Iran from Camp Habib in Basra, but recently Pakistan President Pervez Musharraf granted permission for the MEK to operate from Pakistan in addition. In case you're wondering why we cast a blind eye at the AQ Khan nuclear warehouse sale operating out of Pakistan. This might be one reason.
Might be.
This damn nuance. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to put the capper. There are not enough beads on my person at the moment, so I'm going to have to put the capper on this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America, via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world, through the facilities of American Forces Network. I said that, right? What else do we have? Oh, we have around the world via the Internet on your computer at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, on Channel 108 on Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. And it would be just like one of those countries having nuclear weapons, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists always available at harryshearer.com. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks for assistance in today's broadcast. And a tip of the Le Show Mardi Gras chapeau to Bob Dunn right here at WWL-TV in New Orleans for... And I guess the definition of success, Bob, is you were here. You cannot argue with his here-ness. Next week, news of the digital wonderland, and so much more. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.